Hi, Benji. What a nice podcast. Do you want it to start?
Yes, please.
Look like a nice boy. Do you want a balloon too, Benji?
I'm not supposed to have balloons in the office.
Oh, well, I'm Pennywise the Dancing Clown, and I just bought Seeker. So how about we shake hands?
I should get going now.
Oh, without your podcast? I have it here on a USB drive. Here, take it, Benji. Take it. Take it, Benji.
No! It's the wrong file format! We need MP3! No!
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Bad Science. I'm your host, Ethan Edinburgh, and today we are talking about It, the most successful horror film of all time.
Really?
Probably. Oh, my God.
I think so. It's like broke.
Probably, I think so.
I didn't look it up, but I think that it like broke box office records for horror. I don't know what.
Whoa.
But anyways.
This must be like the worst to a scientist to have people be like, say a fact and then be like, maybe.
I think this is right, but whatever. Let me introduce my guests. We have Dr. Dean Mobbs, the assistant professor of cognitive neuroscience specializing in fear at Caltech.
Whoa!
Yes, a round of applause.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
So cool.
And again, I will ask you to just get up close because you're the one person that everyone really wants to hear from today.
Yes. Deep voice.
Yeah. It's a silky smooth voice too. I love it. And if you're wondering why it sounds like we have a whole like audience in attendance today, this is the first time ever. I don't know if you guys know this, that we've had five people total on the podcast.
Oh,
four was the record before. So now you guys hold the record.
Just like It, wow. Maybe.
Just like It. I was about to say, yeah. Is this the record or is it maybe sort of the record?
It's maybe the record. Okay. No, it is definitely
Cut
the record.
To last episode was the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, all 11 players. Yeah. No, we have from the Horny for Horror podcast, Betsy Sodaro, Adam McCabe, and Manu Agapian.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hello.
How we doing?
Hello. Almost in harmony, I felt.
We hold the record for most successful horror comedy podcast of all time.
Wow.
That's right. Yeah. You think, maybe.
Maybe. Prove it isn't true.
Also, we're going to do the math on it later. Okay, so let's start with the film and probably end with the film and talk about the film in the middle.
Great.
We'll get to all kinds of stuff. And you know, feel free to ask Dr. Dean any questions that come to your mind at any point.
Mm-hmm. What is electricity?
Let's start there.
I'm not a physicist, so.
Oh, great. Sorted on to the next thing.
So you just saw the movie last night, you were
last
saying.
Last night, yeah.
What are your impressions of the film?
It was good. It was being a kid that grew up in the 80s. It's got and the movies are based in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Had a real good kind of Steven Spielberg type feel about it. You know, the kids against the monster. Mm-hmm. That was the sort of one interesting element to it. But then the monster itself, in terms of it's being a shapeshifter that would have all these different physical manifestations, which really played on the kids' fears, was a really interesting part of it. And it's really interesting from a scientific perspective as well. We can get to that later.
Okay.
In terms of what that means.
Yeah. Would you say that it's in your like top five horror films of all time? Did you enjoy that? No.
Very quickly, what you would say your like top three are? Or even
I grew up on an healthy diet of zombie movies.
Yes.
And when VHS first came out in England, actually. Mm. So the Dawn of the Dead, my favorite, Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
Zombies, really, anything reasonably good budget are zombie movies is good with me.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those, like the Romero zombie trilogy has so much like psychology to it in terms of like the racial overtones, how they treated the women, what you do, like the process of dying and being afraid of dying.
Oh, God.
Which makes me want to ask you, what do you think about the science on fast zombies v. slow zombies?
Don't get me started. I'm a slow zombie person.
Yeah, you think fast zombies bullshit.
But, you know, the slow zombie ones are what I grew up with. But the fast zombie ones, Well, really, they're the ones that if they were going to take over the world, yeah. they're the ones that would do it. Mm-hmm. Whereas the slow ones, I mean, it's quite pathetic, really.
Yeah.
We'd have to be really pathetic not to be able to kill them off, you know.
Just yeah. bonk yeah. them on
yeah,
the head.
Exactly. It's pretty predictable. Just run, you know. It's the simplest thing right. to do.
But scientifically, you know. Slow ones make more sense.
Well, you know, being a neuroscientist and thinking about it from a neuroscientific perspective, I've had to really come up with this reality about what makes a zombie, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm going to bring this back in some respects to It, because in It, mm-hmm. there is a zombie in It as well.
Yes.
Yeah. There's that one zombie. So this does relate to It. It doesn't make much sense because, you know, the brain would decay in that sort of body within, you know, a few weeks, particularly if it was in the, you know, the south, you know, with the sun beating down on the body. Yeah. So it doesn't, there's a lot of things you have to dismiss, you know, you know. But the truth is, I think about them, and again, coming back to It as well, is that I think there's a lot of overlap here in some respects. Is that what they are? Is they're us. You know, they look like us, and it's us. And if you look through the evolution of the big, of our most natural predator, who is it? It's ourselves. You know, we can conquer any other animal in tribes, but in terms of the things that kill us the most, well, it's each other. So we're scared of each other more than we should be scared of each other more than any other other creature.
Yeah. You know? I'm scared of humans all the time.
Yeah.
No, for sure. Give me a bear any day. I don't want to be around humans.
I don't trust anyone in this room, but if you gave me a bear.
If you gave me a bear in this tiny room, I'd be fine.
Yeah,
by the way, we just had a bear on our front lawn 2 days ago.
Whoa, wait, yeah. Where do you live?
La Crescenta. It's in the countryside of LA, yeah.
Wow.
Countryside sounds nice, but then you say bear.
Mountain
like
lions. There's a sign that says beware of mountain lions and... Yeah.
So wait, did you get on the front lawn and try to teach him sign language?
No, he wasn't there. All he left was a big crap on the front lawn. It was like literally literally this size, the size of a loaf of bread. And I'm like, that's not a bunny rabbit.
Or it is a bunny rabbit who had a hard night.
Yeah. I don't know
that's
why.
What my wife thought, though. She said, the poor animal must have had a very poorly stomach. That was a fucking bear, man.
I don't even know you, but it tickles me to think of you going on your front lawn and being like, me, friend, and him just ripping you apart like a rag doll.
No. He wasn't there, but I did do a nice search online on Google search for bear poop.
Yeah.
And it matched.
So well, speaking of terrifying, did you guys see the film It, and when did you see it?
Yeah.
And what are your impressions of the film?
Yeah. Well, we all saw it. Together when It opened.
And It was fun.
It was a blast, man.
Yeah, I liked it.
I love the story. I grew up in the 80s as well, so It was a huge part of my childhood with the original miniseries, but then also being a huge King fan and reading that book more than one time, because like you're saying, it's such a good story. It's such a good story about fear, a physical manifestation of fear, but then it's your own fears that are the actual enemy.
Yeah.
Good.
And the way it deals with like the parents and how parents treat kids and how they don't believe you or they make you self-conscious, like Beverly's dad putting all that into her, Mike having like the effects of racism affecting him, and that's how his fear is tinted. Yeah. Like it does a good job of like the different fears of being a young woman, you know, a young person of color, a young boy who wants to do the right thing but is afraid to look like a certain, you know, like a way in front of the other boys.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not an advertisement for parents, is it?
No, not at all.
For adults in general.
Yeah.
Which I think, like, once you read the book and stuff, like, they talk more about why all the parents are, like, completely disconnected. Because, like, apparently there's a curse on the town of Derry.
Right.
Which doesn't totally get touched on in the new movie, at least.
Yeah. Mm. That was my gripe with it.
Yeah.
Because that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of the book. It's a fucking curse.
Right. That's what makes like, the parents more detached and unable to, like, engage. Because when you watch the movie, you're just like, what the fuck is wrong with every adult in this town?
Yeah, they all like made their kids, like, I guess that's why the kids are in the losers club, right? Is because their parents are so terrible. Like, that gives them the, I don't know, I don't want to say powers, but supposedly that's another thing that's left out of the movie that was in the book, is that they all have like these powers. And I didn't read the book, but it sounds like you guys did.
Oh yeah.
It's good.
I wanted to ask you about something else. The It monster is from a macroverse, which is like this dark dimension of monsters.
Yeah.
And then there's like this ancient turtle that created
Yes.
the universe.
Yeah.
Marturin.
Yes. Okay, so this is a legit. I don't know. I read this and I said, book. What are you talking about?
See the turtle of enormous girth on his shell, he holds the earth. It's like the rhyme with him. Yeah, he's part of like a cadre of like huge, what's the word I'm looking for? Where it's like space-wide. Like a titan type thing or a celestial.
Okay.
He's like a celestial being of great enormous power who has put like a bit of himself on Earth to have fun fucking with kids.
Okay.
And I do remember when I got to the part that he was a turtle.
That's stupid.
That was pretty goofy.
Yeah, because the it monster is like, I don't want to say monster, but like you're saying, it's like orange lights. It's like these collection
he's a
of,
god.
Yeah, so yeah. That makes way more sense to me as like an evil spirit conjurer than a turtle. To have a turtle be some sort of all-powerful thing, just feel like that's either lazy
the
or
turtle's
a joke.
The good guy.
Right, right.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't even remember this part.
It's nuts. Yeah. But it also
I can
is,
see
again,
why they didn't include it.
It's like the parents, like an allegory for like getting old and not believing your kids and not supporting them when they need it. It's the same thing with like religion. The bad guy is a god.
Right.
So then like being afraid of what a god can do to you and force you to like feel.
Yeah.
It's a powerful book, man. I truly do think it's his best book.
And very good.
Do you think that they are like connected, some of these books? Because I was also reading very briefly that like there's like a Shining correlation somewhere. You guys know what I'm talking
about? They're all part of a series called The Dark Tower.
Okay.
So in the book, The Dark Tower, very quickly, there's a tower where every reality is each floor. So like our world is a floor of the tower. The it world is a floor of the tower. And slowly that tower is compacting and collapsing in. So all the realities are bleeding into each other. So the world of it will cross over to the world of The Shining, will cross over to The Stand.
Okay.
What like about it's all Thinner?
Yeah.
Thinner is the most important floor.
That's the top floor.
That's the top floor. Movie Thinner, where an Eastern European mystic curses a man to get skinny till he dies.
Because he ran over an Eastern European mystic's mom while receiving Roadhead.
Yeah, while getting Roadhead.
Yeah.
And that was his curse.
Everybody should read and watch Thinner.
Yeah. Okay, we'll do that next week. That sounds cool.
You need to break down the science of the curse on the white man from town.
Yes.
That's the name of the curse in that movie.
Yes. Okay.
The white man from town.
Another like turtle-esque, very basic name. White man from town. Okay, so we all enjoyed the film, it seems like.
Yes.
That's fun.
It's good. It's a fun movie. It's
did
fun.
You jump? Did you jump? Are you a jumper?
No, I do get hairs on the back of my neck going up in these types of movies, though. Like, zombie movies don't do that, but these types of movies, ghost movies, or really kind of, you know, you get that little cold chill that goes through you.
Yeah.
But my wife jumps, you know, and I probably jump when she jumps as well, but I pretend I don't.
You watch it with your wife?
Yes, yeah. We just put our daughter to bed and she was.
Of course.
Yeah, don't let her watch.
Yeah, I don't want her to see it.
Since you do know the science behind fear and what you're feeling, do you, this might be an ignorant question, but do you process it differently? Are you like, oh, here's what's going on with me, and so you don't feel it as much?
It's an interesting question. I never thought about it. Yeah, cheers.
Didn't think that was going.
I think that I'm. When I process it and I think about it, yeah, probably I do think about that. You know, there's these sort of brain systems that I know are becoming active to that. And I process it probably thinking about that. But I don't think I process it different because I think that the mechanisms that it's tapping into are somewhat primitive in some respects. Their reaction, they're not something that you think about. It's not cognitive, you know. It's something that your body reacts to it and then – as William James said, the threat happens and then you cognitively process it afterwards. Okay. You become conscious of it. So that's where the fear comes in, or what we call terror and fear and so on. So
makes me want to ask you, what scared you the most in the movie? Because there's a mixture of fantastical scares and just true life horrors in this film.
So there's something that I study that relates to what most horror movies do. And there's a classic few things they do. And one of them is looming. So if you play people in a MRI scanner or you record from the amygdala of rodents when you're playing like a looming sound, the classic looming sound is the Jaws theme. What's happened? That activates these fear systems in your brain, these fear circuits, if you want to call them that, in your brain, just like they go through the roof when something's just coming closer and further away.
Okay.
So there's a scene in the movie where the clown comes out that out of the water and it tries to get him.
Yeah, yes. Right.
Just comes at him very quickly. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a they use it in most horror movies. The loom. It's where the monster's getting close and they're trying to get in the car or yes. they're trying to get in the front door of the house. It's getting closer and closer. Right. And we studied it. We studied this question. Wow. It came from watching horror movies actually, and then I discovered that there was an old. Field of this of looking at looming, you find that when the threat's further away, it's you're thinking, oh no, and then it gets closer, you tend to shut down those more cognitive conscious processes that we typically associate what we call fear, the feelings of fear as they call it, and we go down into these more primitive regions of the midbrain that we see in reptiles, regions such as. Big word, paraconductal gray, which is a region where we can stimulate in rodents and humans and create fight, flight, freezing behaviors. So you see this switch as the threat comes closer. You're going from how do I get out of here to just reacting. Your body going to freezing, whoa. Or your legs just run you towards the door without you thinking, God. You know.
Or you just fight at.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, fight's an interesting one because we certainly see the fight response in rodents and other animals. It's not quite as clear as whether you see that response in humans. But you certainly see flight responses and freezing.
You calling us cowards?
Yeah.
I'm calling you a coward.
I've had a free nail. Thank God you called it out.
I have accidentally.
I've been wanting to address it.
One time I accidentally punched your tits in a movie.
Yeah, mine has punched my tits before.
Because I was just like, I think it was because I was just like, ah!
Yeah.
And I just.
Was she coming closer to you in a looming way?
I was just sitting there. I was in Lumen.
Oh, okay.
So it was a reaction.
It was a reaction. I do get very visceral.
If you did it on purpose, then you probably want to be in prison.
Yeah. Report my ass. Well, then what did scare you in the movie? Or is there one or two scares that you're like, ooh, that got me?
Yeah, I think that another classic thing that it does in the horror movie and in this movie as well is that they build up your expectations.
Yes.
The kid's walking in the basement and he's looking around. Is using what I call threat assessment, and then he sees some lights and thinks it's some eyes, and then I don't want to spoil the movie. By the way, for those who haven't seen it,
oh no, spoil then, away.
Okay, I'm
so they're listening. Yeah. They've either seen it or they know what's coming. Yeah.
Pause it now. Watch all of it. Read the book and then hit play.
Hi, it's 2023.
But the classic thing they do is that your attention is shifted towards this place in space. You know,
yes,
and then the kid will turn around and the monster's behind them.
Yeah.
They call it prediction error actually in the field of computational neuroscience, but it's basically you have a prediction, and then there's an error in that prediction, and then what you're doing is ramping it up again and creating a second kind of prediction error in some respects.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So it's like the unexpected result.
Yeah. So that is something that actually they did quite well because I think the horror movies play with each other. In this movie, they could have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't in that first phase. So in that first thing, so you're kind of like, oh, you see the eyes, and then it's like, okay, and then the monster's going to be beyond. It's not there, but that's what a good horror movie does. It plays your expectations. And what I think a good horror movie does as well, it would do that, and the monster's not there. So the next time it happens, you expect, oh, it wasn't there last time, and then oh, it was there, you bastards.
Yeah, this one is interesting because Pennywise is like a shapeshifter, like you said earlier. It gives the ability for like the scene when Bev's in the bathroom. And she like walks to the right and then turns to the left. And he's big. He's like cartoonishly enlarged and grabs her throat. Mm. And it's illogical because there's no way he could be there that fast and that size and on her. So it is that thing of my mind can't process that quickly of like, wait, how's he so big? How's he at that angle? Right. And it confuses me, which adds to the scare.
Well, there's also an interesting element from the science on that, which is some work that we had done is that when you find that people find spiders more scary. Mm-hmm. If you ask them and you show them a spider, and then you say, how big do you remember the spider being? Those who become more who are scared of it remember it as being bigger. Mm-hmm. Spider phobics, if you ask them how far away is a tarantula from them, spider phobics rate it as being, say, 1 foot away versus a non-spider. Oh, somebody's not scared of spiders. So that was 2 feet away. So your perception changes with fear, which is interesting.
Oh, my God. Shit.
So much sense.
I have questions. I don't know if you can answer this, but, like, how much – I'm sure you know about this, but, like, what interesting stuff do you know about – like, you know how, like, when you're, like, half asleep, you can see shit that you think is happening?
Sleep paralysis,
Sleep paralysis, and, you know, there's, like, so many commonalities of of like the dark, like people Shadow saying people. Like there's a monster there's a on head. You being heavy. And there's, I'm sure, so many science explanations.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of work on that related to near-death experience as well that, that we've written a paper on. And I've actually had one of these experiences. You know, I was down lying in bed one time. I couldn't move. I was about 25 years old. And I look up and there's a dark shadow of someone staring over me. And there's all these fingers going up and down my back.
Oh, and
me and my friend were talking about it once. I've had about three in my lifetime. And for some reason, I don't know what it is, but every time it happened, when I was younger, the early, like, first couple anyway, I would just try and shout, "Mummy."
Yeah.
I go, "Yeah. Mummy."
Yeah, and you like can't make your voice make any noise.
No. But I'm in my 20s and I'm shouting "Mummy." But it's so primitive, I think, that again, that what happens here is that you're halfway in between sleep, because what happens when you go into full sleep cycles, your body goes into this sort of paralysis, and what's happening is that you're coming out of your sleep. So sleep paralysis happens when you're either going into your sleep or typically when you're coming out of your sleep. Mm-hmm. So you're halfway through this awake phase, but sleep phase as well. Mm-hmm. And people report, you know, the craziest of things they see, you know, and
I think that's kind of like it, that they make up, you know, what they're afraid of to get them out of this sleep paralysis. I was told on a previous podcast that that's why we do it, is because we don't want to be, because, you know, it's good to have sleep paralysis when you're asleep, because you don't want to act out what's going on in your dreams. You want to stay there asleep.
Yeah.
But when you're, you know, half awake, like you're saying, or like waking up, but you're still, you know, you can't move, your brain makes up these super terrifying things
to
get you up.
And the movie does that really well. Like the whole time you're like, wait a second, is this Pennywise playing a trick, or is this real reality? I especially thought of like with the awful creepy father that the girl has. I'm like, wait a second, which elements of these are true and which elements are these are Pennywise?
Yeah, and like the little girl's shoe.
Yeah, like when they find
the Pennywise plant to make them want to go.
When they find the little girl's shoe in the sewer, I was like,
very
wait a
suspicious.
Second. It's unlikely that they really found
like
that
the first
one
thing
girl's
they find
shoe.
That it has her name in it.
Yeah, like, it's like that's probably
write
Pennywise.
Your name on underwear, but like on a shoe.
Yeah.
It's like pretty rare, probably.
Yeah, that'd be weird. Nobody look at my shoes.
Take your shoes off.
No.
But they do a good job of like finding a sweet, for the most part, a sweet spot of like, well, it needs to be real for us to be scared. Because if it's all a dream, we don't give a shit.
We care less.
That's
but
true.
Then it's like, what moments are real? Or,
and it's exactly what you're talking about with like expectation, where it's like, okay, if I don't know if that's a scare or not, when a scare does happen, it's going to hit me hard.
Yeah.
Because then I'm confused over what's real and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a huge part of fear,
yeah, it is definitely.
I mean, you were saying before that there's like the fight or flight or freeze, and fight or flight is like a very famous common phrase, right? But it almost sounded like the way you were talking about it, that the freeze is like the most likely thing that would happen, right?
Yeah, in that situation, and it does. It's when you see a lot of these horror movies that people. You know, the monsters are getting closer to them and you kind of think, just why don't you run, you know, run.
Yeah.
And then they're just like that. And, you know, they freeze in the corner and the monster gets them, you know.
Right.
And in that situation, what you will see in rodents in some respects is that when the threat gets closer, you'll see that's where the last thing they'll do is fight response. You know, that's why if you corner a rat, it will jump at you. Wow. It won't. They're not out to attack you. They're just so scared that they'll jump and they'll find any way to get out. And sometimes it might be trying to be over your shoulder, and you think it's going for your neck, which could be. It could be.
Yeah,
you know, but
it's trying to get out of
but
there.
It's trying to get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
So definitely.
Do you feel bad scaring the hell out of these rats?
I don't work with rats. Yeah, nobody cares about rats. So they really care about what we do with humans and non-human primates. But rats, you can do whatever you want to them in some respects. Well, I've got to treat them nice on a day-to-day basis, though.
Oh, I have a question then for you in your real life, because you know all the science of it, but that doesn't always necessarily predetermine how you're going to react. Mm. Has it made you more cognitive of how you would like to react in a terrifying situation? If you're like, I know now that I know this, I should fight or run away or what?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what there is we've done work, you know, where you train people on emotion, on their emotional processing, and they get better processing their emotions to negative stimuli. But again, it's not like the real world. I mean, it's not like the real world that we have specific ethic committees that we have to go through, and we can't give people PTSD. Now, we can study people with those disorders, but we can't create a task where we create so much fear in them. So
I'll let you do it to me for science.
Give me PTSD.
You got one.
Betsy will do it too.
So,
Mono. Okay. Oh, shit. I'll punch my kids.
She already has it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that it's you know, a lot of the time these when people are under attack from danger or they're in a situation that we call PTSD, it's what's happening there is they're in a situation that they can't control. Mm-hmm. And controllability is a real critical part of the defensive response that we make as well. If we think that we can escape or we don't think we can escape, and that could be a cognitive, conscious process that we're thinking of, that's going to impact what we do as well in our response. So,
what do you think that those kids in IT, that the fear that they experience at the hand of Pennywise, that's PTSD for the rest of their lives, yeah? Or is that something?
They seem pretty adjusted afterwards, actually, don't they? I mean, like, oh, yeah, we just went for a traumatic situation. Let's go and have a sit down by the river and la, la, la.
Make a blood pack.
Stanley, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Stanley.
Yeah.
That's spoiler for it, too, guys.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Read the book.
Read the grow up.
Read about the turtle. Grow up. Find out what this turtle's doing.
Yeah.
You guys will love it.
Blood Pact is so stupid.
Oh, man. I can't stand that kind of stuff. Man.
I don't like that.
I mean, I get like, because I remember being young and people either talking about it or like, you know, doing like a little cut on their fingers or something. But yeah. I cannot stand that stuff when I see it now.
It's
or even
nasty.
In the movie, I was just like, don't include this, man. Get me out of
this. Yeah.
You know, like just say we all agree we will come back. I pinky promise, whatever it is.
Speaking of science, though, I don't buy that either. It's like if you went through a traumatic event, the last thing you would do is say, like, let's do this again, right?
Yeah,
right? That's true.
I think they had a blast beating the shit out of them. It looked fun.
They accomplished something together. They have a little family unit here. It's
well, they overcome their fear and they realized that it wasn't really real or they could control it by reducing their fear. So they have felt, again, that comes back to the control element. The moment that you can control it, it's no longer a fear. It's like jumping out of a plane for the first time, or the first time you do it, you know, like you're like, well, I've never done it either, and I won't never do it. but I can imagine it, the first time you do it is, you know, everyone's scared, and then like you land, and you're like, wow, that was really cool, and then people want to do it again.
You want
to do it again, and the adrenaline comes in, and maybe that could have been played some role there.
Yeah,
although it's a pretty screwed up way of getting your adrenaline.
I mean, I'd beat the shit out of a clown.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Find one.
Honestly, let's go to a fair and just fucking tear them apart.
To empower ourselves to get over our fears.
Of course.
For the sake of science.
Just screaming, you're not real, you're not real.
That is such interesting take on that story then, to be like empowered by defeating him and be like, in 27 years, we're going to come back and beat the fucking shit out of this guy.
Yeah, all over again.
We can't wait. Yeah. Let's bring a bunch of people.
We'll be adults so we can like buy guns.
Yeah.
And buy lottery tickets.
We can get all drunk and do it.
Yeah, grill up afterwards.
I have a question, because, I mean, I'm not going to give away what happens later in the book, but, like, I guess let's say that they pretty much insinuate that fear changes how their brain works. I'm sure you know a ton about this, but how can experiencing too much fear change how your brain works?
Well, I mean, it can be pretty bad if you have too much fear. But what you have here is a concept in the field of extinction, is that if there's a threat and it, you know, let's say that every time I touched your cup, I would receive an electric shock. Yeah.
You would.
Okay, good. Yeah, I can tell.
It's an expensive cup.
Good grip on that cup, I can see. And if I was to do that, and then I'd be scared of that cup. But then if I had to pick it up and I realize after about 20 times that shock's no longer there, I'd no longer show a fear response to that cup. But then if I got a shock, I'd quickly learn that that fear would come back, that reinstatement of that fear would come back. So you pick up you learn the fear quicker. Mm. And that's, if you think from an extinction perspective in this, they're learning, wait a minute, this thing can no longer hurt me, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So,
even though it does hurt several of them.
Yeah.
A few times, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one, like, it does physically mess with
it.
That one kid, like, falls through a level of the house and breaks his arm. And then he's just like, I don't know, he's cool about it later on. I would fuck this forever. You know?
Yeah.
Interesting. What you're saying actually supports what happens later in the story, is because spoiler alert, the clown does come back every 27 years.
Yeah.
They experience it as adults, and it gets worse. or like a lot of them succumb to the fear more so.
But yeah. a lot of it is exactly what you're saying of it's not him, it's them. They're their own worst enemy. Mm-hmm. So it is self-harm. Right. It is like, it's not him directly like grabbing their arm and breaking it. It's right. like because of their fear, they're hurting themselves.
I think that's a very human thing. I think that if you look at spider fibers again and you ask them, you know, about the characteristics of the tarantula, for example, they think that the tarantula wants to attack them, you know. Right. I mean, it's not true. The tarantula just wants to get out of there, be left alone, you know. Mm-hmm. So our thought processes, I think, are important for survival, because what happens is that if we can imagine threats, we can predict what they're going to do in the future, well, we can avoid them now. But this capacity that, to be able to think about the future and what might happen also can make us anxious about things that have never happened. So I think that's somewhat very unique to humans. And again, they actually play on it in the movie, on the audience, as well as the kids within the movie, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah. I have a question. Maybe you already answered this, but like, what part does like fear have in like creating false memories?
So it's an interesting question in terms of creating false memories. We know that they cause flashbulb memories, you know, that people remember. So flashbulb memories, if you remember, you guys might be a bit too young, most of you, but when September 11th happened, mm-hmm. do you remember the first time you saw that on the TV?
Oh,
you
know? Terrified. Yeah. I was in high school.
Yeah.
But I was like, the world isn't safe anymore.
Yeah, I remember that moment. And I remember when the, was it Challenger in 86?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember that. So these are flashbulb memories. You remember a threatening situation or something like that that's significant.
Yeah.
And you not only remember that situation, but you remember where you were, what TV channel was on, what time of day it was.
Yep.
So it definitely does that.
I remember that whole day.
Yeah. Me too.
Every beat of it.
Me too.
Yeah, same here. And I think what happens is as well is that we know that you can create these memories. There's a lot of work on this that's been conducted. That if you just use specific words, people remember things differently. So if you use the word in a car, say something happened and in a car, and then you you say there was a car crash, people are more likely to remember such things as that there was broken glass or that they saw blood or things like that, which actually they didn't see. So our brain can fill in. But again, that doesn't necessarily have to be related to fear. It can just be a general phenomenon that we can, that what happens is that we have these wonderful brains that tell stories and they connect these stories together. So whenever we have a memory, it wants to connect to these other things that, expectancy, it wants, it expects what will be part of that story. So that causes problems, but also we have wonderful writers like Stephen King, you know.
Yeah. Like who said like the brain's an unreliable narrator? Some
That was me.
Yeah. He just said it 5 minutes ago.
Just quoting. That's why it's so fresh in my mind.
That also, man, that just the flashbulb memory thing and like putting in things that aren't there sounds like not only just fear then or like of remembering a scary moment, but also dealing with like insecurity. Is like I remember things that I've experienced or that I've done, like performing or something. I was like, God, it was so horrible. Everyone hated me.
Yes.
Everyone thought was there.
Oh, yeah, and then like, nobody else gives a shit.
Yeah. It's just that's not there at all. So it is my brain like filling in all these negative things that aren't actually there.
Yeah.
Therapy's working on that.
Yeah.
Let us know how that goes.
Why is that? Why is it that the bad times keep you up at night? It's not the good times. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, I'm sure you don't have an answer for that, but just like it's like so much easier.
There's this thing called negativity bias where we and that is seen in depression, you know, to the extreme. But, you know, our brains have evolved to remember the things that are important to our survival, you know. So you want to remember those things because you don't want it to happen again.
Yes.
But when we tend to look back, there's this sort of interest where we look back on our lives and we almost have this positivity bias there where we remember, you know, I grew up in the 80s and I remember at the time feeling pretty miserable actually being in the middle of England.
Uh-huh.
But now I look back, all the friendships I had, all the times that we had, the little things come with sentiment and, you know, warm memories, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how the brain works emotionally, you know, memories as well, but also just the emotion that we tag to those memories, you know.
How did you get into wanting to focus on fear?
So As I mentioned, I've been a horror movie fan. That we got our first VHS video recorder in 1980.
Yeah.
And we got a few movies, and I was 9 at the time. And after about a few weeks again, that we got some horror movies. One was called Zombie Flesh Eaters, which is I watched it recently. It was terrible, but it was it was great at the time.
Yeah, you remember it as being great.
And I just was always sort of looking into the horror movies back then, and Bruce Lee as well. There were two things: zombies and Bruce Lee.
Yes,
and then Star Wars, and Return of the Jedi.
Star Wars.
That would have been a good movie. That would have been a good movie.
I'm so sorry. I was like, I want to watch a movie called Stab Wars.
Yeah. Bro, do you remember back then in the day we used to get these videos? It used to be all about the covers, didn't it? You used to go to a video store.
Yeah, totally.
Yes.
Yeah, like a cartoon of a zombie.
That was the best. I missed that so much.
Even on streaming stuff, I'll judge a movie by its cover in a heartbeat.
That's a big part of our, because we have a horror comedy podcast, and we talk all the time about when you're a kid, it was whatever like the scariest or gnarliest looking cover was, you had to see that movie because of the cover and what it would like make you think the movie was. On that note, and with it in mind, this movie is like a kid's worst fears or their imagination being like, shit, what would be the scariest thing to see right now? And then there just happens to be a celestial god who could make it appear. But what is that? Because it's the same thing where if I'm in bed at night, I'm in a strange house that I don't normally stay in. In my mind, I'm looking at the door and imagining it being pushed open and two like hillbillies with guns standing there or in masks. Why does my brain start to fill in things like that?
I think that what happens in these situations, again, it's speculation, but I can bring it back to the science, which is, the human brain and animal brain in general doesn't like uncertainty. It likes to be in situations in which it's in control. And you see that this is that people who are anxious are really intolerant of uncertainty. They don't like uncertainty. So when you're in new surroundings, you're in a situation which you're uncertain of because you've not experienced that before. You don't know what's going to happen next. Versus the extinction component we just talked about is that at home, you may be even in a much scarier place. But nothing's happened night after night after night. You've become familiar with that them situation. So I think that we don't like uncertainty. And again, I mean, this also comes back to why we don't potentially like clowns, because I think what happens with clowns, and maybe you're going to ask this question, but I can preempt it. But basically with clowns is that when we look at people's faces, I look at your faces now, I can see you look scared.
Yeah, I'm terrified.
Well, they were both veterans of the Stab Wars.
Wars.
You got PTSD.
Three tours of Stab Wars.
Stab Wars.
Is that whenever we want to know what somebody's thinking, what you guys think, is that we tend to get that information from the expression on your face. I've got an idea about, I can infer what's going on in your brain, there's no field on this. But again, the uncertainty of the clown's face doesn't really show much expression. In some respects, it only shows the one expression, which is the freaky smile, which is like if people, we see these movies where people are robots and they're just smiling all the time. Yeah, like that.
Nasty.
Yeah, don't do that.
Nasty.
And we know that's not true.
We know.
Like our animal brains, like that's not real.
Right.
No, yeah. So I don't know what's going on, what you're thinking.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what you're thinking. I'm uncertain of it. It makes me feel uneasy.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So I think, again, it all comes around again to this uncertainty element, is that clowns have that, provide that to us. And and even the situations in which you're in, we feel comfortable when we know our surroundings. We know what's going to happen next. We don't
like
uncertainty.
The uncanny valley, in a sense.
The uncanny valley is the weird, slight off kilter.
Because it's still like a human's head.
Yeah.
But everything else is like, that's not the information I get from a human's head.
Yeah.
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 Ooh.
Have you guys had situations where you were uncertain about something and that made you afraid? I was just thinking of when I first moved into the apartment I'm living in now. I was sleeping upstairs, going to sleep, and I would hear this like kind of like a, not like a ticking, but like something hitting something else every like few seconds. And I had no clue what it was, but it sounded like it's in the apartment somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, like this isn't outside. And it's like, it's been happening now every, you know, minute or so. And so I was getting up to go see what it was. My girlfriend's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I hear a sound. I don't know what it is. I got to go check it out. And it was really, you know, like it was freaking me out a little bit. And she goes, it's the ice machine. It's just it's making ice in the freezer. And I was like, okay, now that I know it's ice, I'm cool.
You let your guard down, and that's when you walk by the hallway window, and it's a man with a very long finger tapping.
That's how that short film ends.
Because you let your guard down because you had an answer for it.
That's
and then,
right.
Boom.
Yeah. That genius thief is always sounding just like an ice machine.
The ice machine killer.
My most notable ghost / sleep paralysis story involves me staying in an old Greek house.
Okay, here
we go. And I'm talking about a Greek hut that was like, that is truly thousands of years old. And then going to sleep there, I knew for a fact that it used to be a goat slaughter farm.
Whoa.
And like, I knew that. And like, I had seen the old goat slaughtering equipment. And I was in this strange bedroom. And then that night, of course, and this is like the oldest house in the world, like where it was just like those white little terracotta huts you see on the posters of Greece. And that night I saw a terrifying shadowy figure in the doorway whose hands were so droopy, the back of his palms touched the floor.
Whoa.
And in my mind, it was so freaking real.
Yeah.
But I mean, certainly there's so many.
Tell the rest of it.
The other part of it that's very scary that I'm sure that I have to say, I think.
He's waiting outside in the car right now.
Knuckles on the ground.
Honk, honk.
I won't valet.
Is that when I told I was staying in my brother-in-law's bedroom, and then I told him I had a terrible night of sleep, and then he immediately was like, did you see anything? And I was like, And then in that same room that I was sleeping in, he opened an old dresser, because this was the bedroom he used to live in, and he pulled out an old notebook, and he says, did you see him? And it was the dark figure with hands that touched the floor.
He drew it?
He drew it.
Get the fuck out of here,
when he was little.
Isn't that fucked up?
Which is crazy.
And you had never heard that story? You had never seen that drawing before?
No.
And you were going to leave that part out?
I know. The reason being, there is an explanation. Of course, many people have had sleep paralysis. And I mean, we all have, there's common, through thousands of years of history, people have common feelings of what that, like, they're,
but you
like,
guys aren't, you said he's your brother-in-law?
He's my brother-in-law.
So you guys, it's not like a just genetic, like you guys aren't just afraid of the same thing randomly.
No, or ghosts are real. Bye.
See you guys later.
Yeah.
Or your brother dressed up.
Say what?
Your brother dressed up?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it could be. Talking about it now.
That is so funny.
For thousands of years, they lie about the goat slaughtering. Do you believe in ghosts?
No.
No,
and,
okay.
So
how do you respond to something like that?
So it's interesting. So there's a lot of new scientific research showing how people who report seeing ghosts and so on. It's quite I wouldn't say it's common, but it's observed sometimes in people who have Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. Where there's one example of a guy who said he would see his he'd be in his house and. All of a sudden, all these young people would come in and start cooking in his kitchen. And he'd go, he'd say, excuse me, and they would ignore him. And then he'd go up and touch one of them on the shoulder and they'd all disappear.
Whoa.
One of the classic ones is macular degeneration can cause people to see things and they're not there. I had a friend who said that she had macular degeneration in her eye, and for about 15 minutes, she watched a full football game. Like going on in that one eye. So the key behind it is that our brains, again, are prediction systems. They have this imagination system that we have. But if you imagine now what's going on in this room, all of this information is going on. My brain can't process all the nooks and crannies of your faces. And it has to predict. They call it predictive code and so on. But it has to make a prediction. It has a template in your brain that makes predictions about what it expects to see. Mm-hmm. And you can trick it.
Mm-hmm.
If you stimulate parts of the region called the temporal parietal junction, you can create people, give people out of body experiences, make them feel that they can see themselves.
Whoa.
Or they can feel that people are behind them.
Oh my God.
How do you do that?
Well, you get so these are patients.
Take a note.
Yeah, take a note.
What should I buy at Home Depot?
Well, there is ways you can do. You can do it with like, TMS. You can buy the expensive, but these are typically studies that are done with people who have epilepsy. And you have to go in the brain to stimulate parts of the brain to find out where the epilepsy is. And then you can remove that. But you don't want to be removing parts of the brain that are still functioning normally. So you use these. This is a classic technique they use in surgery for people with extreme forms of epilepsy. But anyway, what they do is they go in and they can stimulate these parts of the brain using electrical stimulation on the cortical surface there. And there's it's been known for decades that you can evoke these different responses. I'll write a paper about this. How come I know about this stuff? But it's really strange what the brain can do.
Why would it do it? And why would it do it to him and his brother-in-law?
So the interesting thing is...
Yeah, prove it.
Show
me the paper.
I have to open up his skull.
Yeah.
Go inside.
Yeah.
And we could do a demonstration now if you'd like.
Yeah.
Yes, I would.
It's interesting because you get this mass hysteria. People say that they've seen, they've been in groups and they've all seen things. Again, the power of suggestion can have a very powerful effect.
So you're saying it's never real.
I'm saying that the evidence for it is there's a more real world explanation for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because the other explanation that you have is goes beyond nature, goes beyond physics, and there's no explanation for it.
Okay.
And in the relation to near-death experiences where they see a lot of these, the classic out-of-body experiences, seeing dead relatives and these sorts of things. I mean, if you take people and you say, okay, directly after they've had or close to when they've had a near-death experience, it's actually nothing to do with near-death. It's to do with the fact that that maybe they fainted or something, and their brain's in a state of trying to make sense of the world. They try and make sense of the world. They make up the world. And this is where you see, and this is one belief in the disconnection theory, is that you see this in schizophrenia. They have these strange visual illusions, auditory illusions. They see things because their brains, the wires are all crossed, and their brain's continuously trying to make sense of the world. That's what our brains do. They make sense of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so in that situation, what's it do? Well, if that doesn't work, this is going to work. So... And they get it wrong. That's where you see these. And I think this is what happens again in a lot of disorders and so on.
Mm-hmm. So I'm probably batshit crazy.
Or you will be.
Yeah.
All genetics point to yes. Is what I'll say.
The fact that you have pickle jars on your hands points to yes.
I didn't want to say anything. It was weird, but you know, you're a guest.
Okay. You're telling me the walls aren't winking and smiling at us.
So let's play a game.
Drugs do this, LSD as well. By the way, were you on drugs? This is what we need to make sure.
I honestly do believe that there's such a scientific explanation behind all of it. I was jet lagged. My brain was tired. I was in a strange bed.
That could explain
so
all of it, but the brother-in-law aspect of it is...
Yeah, and it means...
Right, but like
that's crazy to me.
So many people experience sleep paralysis. He could have also just experienced...
How many drawings of monsters did he have? Because it sounded like he said, did you see this?
Do you believe in ghosts?
I am torn.
Okay,
unsure.
Yeah, that's why that's a sticking point, because Mono and I are hard, like, we don't believe in ghosts.
Don't believe in ghosts.
It doesn't happen.
But Betsy, you do
believe in
them.
Yeah.
Just the name
ghosts. And you
guys
have both seen them.
We both have had
don't believe in ghosts. I've absolutely
seen
a ghost.
Twice.
That's, like, to me, the word has, like, a bad connotation. To, like, you say ghost, and I'm thinking, like, oh, Scooby-Doo and, like, whatever. That doesn't exist. You know what I mean?
That's always the janitor, though.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which is a very fucking scary thing. When you think about it, some janitor in a rubber mask
really
jumping out at me and my teen friends.
Yes.
Are you
put him in
me?
An insane asylum and not in jail.
My dog can talk and I hear it. It's like there's a lot going on.
But I think that there is something to say about just like, I don't know, weird energetic dimensions that we don't understand yet. I feel like we're very primitive as human beings and that there's a lot we don't get yet. So I don't know that they're real. I just think like, oh, something else being out there besides just us, sure, like that's possible.
Do we have like a long way to go with like mapping brains and figuring out why they do what they do?
Yeah, we do. And it sort of depend upon the techniques that we can use. You know, we use, like I use, is functional MRI, and we look at changes in the oxygenation, the blood flow in the brain, as a function of, you know, seeing this stimulus, seeing your face versus your face, for example. And that's where we kind of are with it. And we see that the brain is an interconnected system. And we're really learning now that we can't really focus on one specific part of the brain, but we need to look at the whole brain as a unified functioning system. It's its own little ecology inside of our skulls. So that's, I think, what we are learning is that really the brain is and integrates information very, very well, but it gets it wrong. And it's a prediction machine. It does those two things. And usually what you'll find is that if you play a certain sound, I'll give you an example. If I play a certain sound into your ear, the parts of the brain that were associated with that, the visual perception of that will become active. So it's saying that the auditory and visual circuitry are interconnected. And this is captured by a classic pattern called the McGurk effect, where you just, people go da, 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 like that. And then they just do it with it, but they flick their tongue off their lip, off their teeth, say exactly the same thing, but it makes it look like this. It sounds like a different word. You should check it out, the McGurk effect. It's
McGurk
phenomenal.
Effect.
Yeah.
Was that like the Laurel Yanny thing? Do you know about that?
No, I'm not sure of that, yeah.
Where they like played a sound and some people heard Laurel, some people heard Yanny.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
That's interesting.
But then you can switch it in individuals. You can do this perceptually as well. You can. I should mention that if you tell people that, you know, the dots are going left on the screen versus right, people are more likely to see the dots as going left than seeing them right. And then you ask these, then you tell them they're going right, but it's actually the same amount of dots are going left or right on the screen.
See, that to me is like the reasoning for why ghosts might exist, because it's like, well, we still have no idea what's going on in our everyday lives. You know, you tell me one thing and I'm just
so
like,
why,
yep.
Why not other energy? Yeah, why not other like dimensions and shit?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, different levels of energy that we, you know, I mean, I don't believe in it in the sense of I'm a atheist, but I don't believe in ghosts in the way, like you say, the Scooby-Doo or the way that from the religious perspective, but this, you know, there's certainly ways that our brain can make up these we can see things that are not there. If you call that a ghost, you can call that a ghost, but it comes from in here. And then there's, as you say, we, you know, we learn a lot about, as science gets better and better, we learn that there's different probably frequencies of things in the world that we don't, our senses don't observe. You can't say that doesn't exist, but there's not evidence for it either.
Because like, and please correct me if I'm wrong, like when you die, doesn't like some amount of electricity, like a because there's some amount of electrical energy in your brain that escapes.
Yeah, it's enough to light a light bulb, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah. Whoa!
Yeah. And is there any scientific explanation behind one, I guess I don't even know how to make it make sense, but someone connecting with that amount of electricity?
Like
and
electrical
seeing something?
Energy as a spirit?
Yeah. Is that, there's
well,
no science behind
no,
that.
I mean, the question is then, you're arguing what Descartes argued years ago, the dualism idea that the brain and the mind are separate from each other, whereas most neuroscientists would say the physicalism, which is the monism argument, which is the brain and the mind are the same thing. Now, what happens is your brain is electrical because it has these electrical conducting neurons in there, which is why we have a lot of fat in our brain. That's the white matter. It's myelin, and we know that myelin conducts, is fat. It conducts electricity faster. That's why if we didn't have the myelin, our brains wouldn't have the wouldn't process information the same. We'd be probably like very, very slow, you know. And we see this in MS when the myelin goes away. That's what happens in MS.
Oh my god!
So our brains have electricity in them, but how that electricity, moves beyond the brain, I don't believe it's like you switch a light bulb on the electricity, you take the light bulb away from the electricity source, and there's no longer any electricity in it. That's probably an analogy that I would think of. Now, what's an interesting question is that what you do find with EEG and other methods is that you do see that there is, you know, electricity. You know, you can record certain volts on the surface of the skull. You know, I thought it was interesting. You know, if I was to, your motor cortex is just here. And if I'm moving my fingers like that, my motor cortex is activating. So what happens if you've got two people and you stuck their heads together?
Oh, yeah.
And then one's moving their fingers. Does it make the other person want to move their fingers because you're stimulating their brain? It's a silly argument. But that would be the experiment that you'd want to do at first. And then just gradually move the distance away from each other. And when does it stop?
Wow.
I'm never doing that experiment, by the way.
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. Never say never.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was also told that there's, what's that drug that, like, you, like, it's
acid.
DMT.
That it's like the same, it's like a similar compound or like something when you die that you're like flooded with something or other that makes you trip balls or whatever when you die. Yeah. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know about that, but what I do know is that some of the rodent work is that what you find, there was a paper a few years ago now, that showed that when the art stops, what you begin to see is this burst of electrical activity for a short period of time in the brain, and then the brain dies.
Wow.
And that might be the argument, is that, you know, that in certain situations where people have actually died, that could be one argument for all of a sudden the brain's just trying to kickstart itself and it's creating all of these weird experiences. But that was in a rodent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you can't do these experiments in humans. You'd never really get the ethical committee to pass that, you know.
You'd have to be a Dr. Frankenstein.
Dr. Frankenstein, yeah.
Or a Herbert West.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Reanimator. You a fan of Reanimator?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. HP Lovecraft, yeah.
Great.
It's always good to see some intestines attack someone.
You know? Yeah. Yes.
How? What about the science on that's pretty iffy, huh?
Yeah.
That'd be a
well,
good one.
Yeah, yeah.
It actually, you know, it's funny, you've got different degrees of what's, you know, feasible. And in that sense, with Reanimator, is that you could imagine that there could be some chemical that could create, you know, corpses to
reanimate.
But like having an and or something like that running around is just not going to do it. You need a central nervous system to control those behaviors. And it comes back to zombies as well, you know. Doesn't really make sense.
I love thinking about a scientist watching these movies, and the moment a hand like stands up and runs away, they're like, "Well, this is stupid. That hand wouldn't run."
What a goof!
What a goofball!
All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Hey, everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the streaming wars, and there's a new docuspecial on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
So, shockingly, we have, like, hit pretty much all of these points that I really wanted to hit just in our own natural conversation, which is great. But I do have one, and I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on it. So, the jump scares that are in a lot of these horror movies, which I feel like there were jump scares in the 80s movies also, but they were different. It wasn't just this like bombardment of loud sounds and I don't know, just cheaper scares, I guess I want to say. And so I thought this movie did a really good job at like not including, because I just assume like, okay, it's a modern horror blockbuster hit film. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a bunch of these things which are going to like upset my girlfriend. And, you know, I don't want to deal with that. So, but it wasn't. And I liked it a lot more because of that. And so I just wanted to get your guys' like take on that whole phenomenon, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do agree. Like jump scares being used too frequently is a problem in modern horror, where it's like a really loud music sting and something there
too.
Because it becomes
when it's just people stepping on toys the whole time
and it goes
not fucking scary.
I love it when it's just like, what do you want for dinner?
Yeah. It's just like, funny, but Bart, do you like my hockey mask?
Yeah. It's like a loud sound is kind of always scary because it's a really loud sound, but that doesn't mean I was scared.
Yeah. Well, it's the difference between a scare and fear, where we talk a lot on our show about like how good like daytime scares are. Ooh. If you have someone like a shot in Halloween where Laurie Strode looks out the window and a man in a mask where you can't see his face is just staring at her and he's not doing anything. Mm-hmm. It's like that's more fucking haunting scary to me than a because my brain is trying to like figure like what would I do if I was in that situation. Yeah. If it's a jump scare, it's like I jumped. Mm-hmm. Period.
Move on.
That's it. Move on. I'm not afraid.
Yeah.
I just was startled by a loud noise, but it doesn't affect me in any way.
I feel differently. Like, I think, I honestly think jump scares are pretty, I think a lot of them are really fun, and I honestly think it's an accomplishment in sound design.
Oh, like, interesting.
Honestly.
Interesting take. Hot take.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, I'm impressed by whoever designed that.
But when it gets to be that's the only scares that are happening,
yes,
that sucks.
Yeah, it sucks if they're the only scares, but I don't think they're... In my opinion, I don't think they should be totally ruled out. Because I'm like,
I don't, because I can get behind them, and there I feel worse.
If it's used like rarely, it is much better than the movies where it's just like, oh my god, this is way too much. But I think, I don't know for sure because I haven't A-B'd this, but I think it would be more effective in some of these instances not to have any sound. Like I like when there's just
big,
you know, something scary like you're saying to look at for a second, and then it goes away. You're like, whoa,
that's
what
the big,
fuck was that?
A big Dario Argento thing is like just locking off a shot. It's a frame and the sound design in his movies is amazing, but then it cuts out to nothing. Mm-hmm. And then you see a door slide open. You see something slide into the picture.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is that thing?
Yeah.
And having to think through that in silence is more terrifying than anything else to me.
That's what I'm saying.
But what I'll say.
Like, how am I supposed to feel almost?
Yeah.
Like,
music indicates how you
feel.
Yeah.
Yes.
I do agree. Those scares are much more impressive and more, key to the story they're telling, but I do think in terms of what horror, like we were talking about earlier, like horror's job is to subvert your expectations or make you feel safe never. And I think that's one thing that jump scares actually do well, of like, holy shit, I got scared when that person closed their locker. That makes me now feel unsafe no matter what scene I'm watching in this film. I think
you need to use it well. And to me, since you're such a huge sound design head, one of the best uses of a sound design scare is in the Exorcist, when he's listening to the audio recording, and then a phone rings and it's way too loud, but it's that, like, it's a quiet recording and it's getting quieter, and then you
I
have
can always
happen.
Get behind a loud old timey phone ring.
Old timey,
scary.
And I'll Who's always be here for like a close your vanity mirror.
Love it
to someone behind you. I'm always going to be here for that.
Well, with the start of reaction, there's a lot of work on that in rodents because that goes directly, you know, the frequency goes in directly into your auditory nerve, into your, like, you know, skeletal sort of motor response.
Yeah,
it's not even cognitive. And then the other element is the, you know, the you know it's coming, but you still get a start of reaction as well. You know, which is interesting. I think also what's interesting in it, as well as some of my favorite zombie movies and Halloween, is there's very few movies, all the old movies, old time movies, which are great, but there's very few movies where you see horror in the sunshine, and in Day of the Dead, and it starts off with, they're in Florida, and the sun's coming down. There's palm trees in paradise, and there's these zombies walking around. And it's like this doesn't make sense because horror is typically in the dark. Bad things up in the dark, not in the sunshine. So I think, and they do that again in it, where there's the boys outside the house, and that zombie comes along, and
so on.
Or like under the train yard, the like leprosy homeless man that like crawls out from under the through the door. That's fucking terrifying.
And maybe it's an expectation thing too, because now we've all seen so many horror movies, and the bulk of them are at night or in some dark basement or something. So it's like somebody's going into a basement, we all kind of know what's up. But if somebody's just walking on the street during the day, you don't expect it as much, maybe.
And there's a couple that do that really well. Like, I want to say, like, Conjuring does it.
Conjuring
yeah.
Drag Me to Hell does it.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, what's the Conjuring Day scare?
The one with the sheet?
Yeah.
Where the sheet flies off, and then there's, like, a person behind it.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's so good.
Those are
Drag
impressive.
Me to Hell has a good one. In the House,
maybe,
right?
Yeah. Another good question, just, like, what's your favorite of recent times horror movies? Because I was reminded when I was watching it of the Babadook. I loved the Babadook. I thought that was fantastic.
Oh, I loved it.
And it also didn't have that many, I think, jump scares. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong, but I've sensed that. Do you guys have, like, things that you've seen?
Conjuring recent is one that I really love.
I love The Conjuring too.
It still scares me so much.
Did you see there was a sequel, but I didn't watch it.
Conjuring 2.
It's okay.
It's all right.
Conjurers.
There's a good nun scare in that, but it was
Felt like such an Avengers thing, because like you can tell they're planting characters in there for this
universe
they have been blowing out.
Got it. That's kind of annoying. It just sounds annoying. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I think a horror movie I saw recently that I really enjoyed was Netflix's The Ritual.
Oh, haven't seen it.
Yeah, okay. I thought it was really... That's the one in the woods.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 That one was great.
I think it's great. And Ritual, it deals with, like fear. It has a great cold open where something real world horrific happens.
Okay.
And then the kind of way that a guy mentally unpacks that as the years go by, because he's now put into a different horrific situation, but is still dealing with the effects of the real world thing that happened to him earlier. And I thought that juxtaposition was great.
It's a good one.
It's a good movie.
We saw one on Netflix recently called Hush. That I feel like is very underrated and not talked about.
I think I saw
it. It has a deaf protagonist.
It's like in a house?
It's like in a house in the woods, but it has a deaf protagonist. And of course, they play with sound very much so, illustrating what moments the protagonist can hear and cannot hear.
It's
terrifying.
Nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Are you looking at me?
Yeah.
What do you like,
Dean? I have a 3-year-old daughter, so it's difficult to actually get to watch any horror movies like I used to.
Yeah.
So scary for you is having to watch the same cartoon over and over.
How many times have you seen
Wreck-It
Frozen?
Ralph.
Yeah. Frozen, Frozen. She's evil in that,
Songs are right.
So mine is just sticking with the TV shows. And you guys know which show I watch, you know, The Walking Dead. So, and I kind of felt this last season, actually, of Fear the Walking Dead, actually got a lot of criticism. But I thought it was the best season out of all of them. So, And again, I think with them, it's a different type of violence. And I think I like end of the world things because it's not just about the monsters. In fact, the good zombie movies, the good those types of movies are the ones that you put these individuals in this situation. It's about how they react to that situation, how they survive. Mm-hmm. And then how they and you often find that, particularly the Walking Dead ones, is basically it's about how they survive and combat other humans who are actually more evil than the zombies themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm into them types of things. I like to watch a lot of these end of the world things, but they often have some element of monsters in them, which are typically us in some aspects.
Just like you were saying with it. And it's like, zombie movies do such a good job of that because the zombies don't speak. Mm-hmm. So it is like watching how people treat each other in this heightened situation, which the Romero movies destroy each level of it.
God,
and like Dawn, you know, and being like a comment on consumerism and like there's all these smart subtexts. But then I've found myself doing that with all horror, too, where I like recently rewatched the Universal Frankenstein.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, my God, these like the Dr. Frankenstein is an egomaniac.
Yeah,
he is like he's a nightmare. Frankenstein's monster does. He's innocent. Mm. And it's like you watch how the town treats each other and like it's a like the classes treat each other differently. Yeah. And it's like, God, these are the monsters.
Mm. Wow.
There's that thing of like it always goes back to us.
A recent one I really love that I just didn't think of was Get Out.
Which
God, is just
so good.
All
Get
of
out.
That.
Fantastic.
And that was just so
perfect.
Fucking good.
Yeah.
I saw it like twice in the theaters, which is.
Did you see Get Out?
No.
You should watch that.
Yeah.
We recommend
it.
It's great.
Definitely.
It's great.
We did that last week, actually.
Oh, Get Out.
Open Mike Eagle. He was fantastic. Hereditary was another one I saw somewhat recently, which I loved.
Is that something about genetic engineering or something?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
That
we'll say that. That way you'll be surprised.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we go, I do want to play a quick game that I'm calling What Do You Nobia About Phobias?
This is very me.
This is
great.
You.
I like try to make games up and they always have terrible pun.
I think they're always great.
I like them.
We've got a couple. Let's talk to them. Witchcraft or bitch nah?
Yeah, witchcraft or bitch nah. Because I really want it to rhyme. What was another? I don't even remember the other ones I had, but.
That one
was the winner.
Satanic. Okay. Natanic.
Yeah.
Satanic or Natanic. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I usually make a custom game, and they usually have terrible, which I think can be like synonymous with great puns, depending on who you are.
So just quick answers, I take it?
So yeah, I'm basically going to just list off a few phobias. Phobia is an exaggerated irrational fear. Do you want to guess first how many people in the United States have phobias?
Oh my God! Everyone.
I'm going to guess 200 million.
Wow. 300 million. How many people are in the United States?
Like what? 360, 380,
380 million. Every single person.
Do you know the answer? Do you want to guess?
I don't know the answer. No.
Everybody's got a phobia.
I saw online 19 million people in the United States have phobias.
But that they're talking about.
I think a lot of people.
It's way more.
I think a lot of people probably just say they have a phobia, but it's not like a legitimate.
Oh, got it. Like diagnosed phobia.
Right.
Oh,
okay. Right.
But it's an interesting fact about phobias, which is if you look at the highest amount of spider. And tarantula, spider and snake phobias in the world. Mm-hmm. They're in Great Britain and Republic of Ireland have the highest rating of the amount of phobias they have.
Wow.
And we don't even have any scary spiders or snakes. And the fact is the belief is that, and there's a lot of research out there on this, is that if you have, you acquire that fear maybe vicariously from watching TV and so on.
Yes.
Right.
But you never actually encounter them, so they become more scary because you've never encountered them. Yeah.
That brings up another completely different and bigger question, which is like, is it wrong to make these films? Like, are you like, you go out to make a horror film because you love horror and you love, you know, scaring people and scary movies, and then you don't know it and you're making, you know, a million people in Ireland afraid of spiders. Like for their
That's
whole lives.
That's always my goal.
Well, an increase in Guinness sales, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Whoa.
Okay, so here we go. And I'm going to mispronounce these for sure.
Great.
Emetophobia. Anybody know what that is?
I think I know what it is.
Okay.
It's fear of throwing up.
Yes, fear of throwing up.
I'm Greek.
He's Greek. He's going to know all the root words.
All right.
God damn it.
Emeto means throw up in Greek, motherfuckers.
Oh.
All right, great. So, yeah.
Fear. So I'll shut up for the next one.
The next one is spanakopita-phobia.
I'm stumped.
I want to say erythrophobia.
Erythrophobia.
A fear of always in penises.
Yeah, that's what I was guessing. A fear of someone putting like a straw up your pee hole.
No, but that is a
plastic
legit
one, though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Whoa.
Oh, yeah, that's the scariest part.
Erythrophobia. Any guesses besides, of course?
Your Greek roots?
I don't know this one. I'm going to say, I don't know.
It's the fear of blushing.
Whoa.
Oh,
what an adorable fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shirley Temple was riddled with that.
Yeah.
Is it witnessing blushing or yourself blushing?
I think it's, like other people witnessing you blushing.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Not a professional.
That just fuels your blushing.
That's true.
Totally.
Acrophobia.
Oh.
More common one.
Acrophobia.
Yeah. Fear of heights.
Fear of heights. That's correct.
Oh, nice.
Acrophobia. Getting them.
Take that, doctor.
Take it.
Yeah. Eat shit.
Who's the professor of fear now? Me, the scarecrow.
Eat shit. The most
shit-eating phobia.
The most interesting person I've ever talked to. Take that.
Yeah. Okay. Escalophobia.
Oh. Escalators.
Yes, fear of escalators. That's correct.
You say Eskimos.
That's true.
I think that's just called racism.
I have one.
Hey, I didn't make it up.
Nomophobia.
No homophobia?
A fear of not having any more mono around.
No mo.
This is a relatively new one. I'll give you that hint.
No mo.
Oh, so kind of like FOMO. Maybe.
Fear of missing out?
It is not fear of missing out. Oh, yeah, that's correct, basically. Yeah, fear of being without technology, without a cell phone, without a computer.
Yeah. Everybody has that.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
United States,
all
listen up.
This one is, I think it's pronounced coulrophobia. Coulrophobia. Or maybe coulrophobia. C-O-U-L-R-O-phobia.
Oh, fear of color?
Nope.
Colors?
This one has to do with it.
It has to do with
fear of clowns.
Fear of clowns.
Oh, that one.
Coulrophobia.
Should have done our research.
Which I wanted to touch on the whole, like, clown apocalypse. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. That happened 2 years ago?
Yeah, like, it was right before
In Phoenix and shit?
Yeah, people were arrested in Great Britain also.
Is this where they, like, kind of like had that video of those guys in the fields who were dressed up as clowns?
Ew. Dressed up as clowns and, like, harassing people and, like, threatening to kill people. Very strange. If you're doing that out there, cut it out.
Come on.
What are you doing?
What
do you do? Get a hobby. Play tennis, freak.
Read a book.
Read it. All right. Yeah. Globophobia. Globophobia.
Fear of the world?
No.
Fear of globes?
No.
Globophobia.
Global warming?
Fear of travel?
No. Fear of being round.
It is. Oh, it's yes, sort of round. Yes. Fear of balloons.
Yes.
Oh.
Or more specifically,
oh,
like the popping.
I'm starting to see the theme.
Okay.
Next one's fear of turtles.
Me and Betsy saw a documentary where people got off on balloons popping, and we hated it.
It was tough to watch.
We thought it would be fun, and then we immediately turned it off.
Yeah, dude is like.
He was really,
really into some balloons popping.
It sucked.
Yeah, that does not sound like a good documentary. I saw one called Rats, which I think is on Netflix. Okay. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
It's the, what's that guy that did Super Size Me?
Oh, yeah.
Morgan
Spurlock did this thing on rats. He's not in it, but I guess he like directed it. And it's just about how rats are taking over and we can't kill them. And they just like don't care when we poison them.
Well, my good friend the doctor is making them all insane. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah, freaking them out.
Surgery, get rid of the
do something.
Zombie rats.
Okay, I got two more. Pogonophobia.
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 Fear of sewers.
The pogo the clown.
I will say that there are three men in here that people would be afraid of with this fear.
Oh. Beards.
Yes, fear of beards. Oh. That is correct.
Oh.
Fear of beards, pogonophobia.
Fear of fiercely intelligent people.
Beards.
Which one? All right.
Which one's a dummy?
Yeah. This is the last one here, Judeophobia.
Oh, fear of religion?
No.
Fear of Jews?
Fear of Jews is correct.
Are you Jewish?
God.
I am Jewish.
Great. So now I'm comfortable with you bringing that one.
Bringing up Judeophobia. Yeah, I feel like I've encountered several people with this.
How?
So we did a survey where I do this every year in my class, and we rank after the top 100 fears that you have, and the lowest was always fear of Jews.
Oh, great. So no one's afraid of us.
Well, that was New York, though, so it might be a bit different.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely. That's, we're just giving people bagels on every corner, so nobody's afraid of that.
There's a lot of places to be immersed, if do some immersion therapy if that's your fear.
Yeah, that sounds great to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last one, kind of piggybacking on what you said, I have here the top five most common fears, according to Elle, the magazine Singapore.
Let's see if we all have
Elle Singapore.
Elle Singapore put out the top five most common
magazine.
How did you
read,
get the archives of this
I think that
encyclopedia?
I just wrote top fears, and then this came up, and I said, this is perfect. Elle Singapore, I trust you. So, yeah, top five fears. You guys want to take a...
Is one not having makeup on.
Oh, yeah,
L. L readers.
Fear of dying.
Fear of dying, not on there.
Heights.
That's stupid.
Fear I think heights.
Heights is on there, number three.
Fear of spiders.
Fear of spiders, number one.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. More. Is that surprising? Does that
That's
make sense?
Stupid.
So what? I'll tell you what we find, but I can, and what I know others
okay.
find. But I'll let you finish and then we'll
go. Oh, okay. So we got heights number three, spiders number one. I got three left.
Falling.
No.
Airplanes?
No.
Ghosts?
Oh, no.
Snakes?
Snakes, number two.
Stupid.
Whoa.
Yeah. Two most common fear.
And spiders, yeah.
Being alone?
Nope.
We're thinking too,
agoraphobia.
Like,
yes, agoraphobia is number four.
Uh-huh.
And number
What's
five,
number
this
five?
One I couldn't believe, so I don't know if you'll ever get it.
Fear of your man not kissing you
the
at
dark?
Night.
No, it's dogs.
Oh, dogs.
According to Elle Singapore, it was dogs.
But
they don't eat them there, do they?
I have no idea what they do in Singapore, so I cannot comment.
Yeah.
So, what we find is that there's an interesting joke within it as well. We find that generally it's fear of losing a loved one is number one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But what I found a few times, this is Columbia University students, is that it was six or seven on 2 years that I ran it, was that fear of getting a low GPA.
Oh, wow.
And then number 14 was a fear of dying. So the GPA was more important to them
than being alive.
Yipes.
That's so funny.
Yipes.
Hilarious.
A fear of missing the season finale of American Horror Story is number two.
I'm scared of not being scared with my friends.
Yes. We won't be on Netflix for a year.
What do we do? Maybe we can end on a positive note since we've mentioned such dark, mystical shit.
Yeah.
How can people... quell their fears, alleviate their fears, face their fears.
Allow drugs? Me to answer this question.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, lots of drugs.
I think drugs is great.
Okay.
Especially depressants. Yeah, mixing them with
mixing them together,
hallucinogenics.
Okay,
yeah,
that's.
I think it's probably educating yourself of what you should be scared of and what you shouldn't be scared of.
Okay,
and there's a lot of baggage that we have that I think that we carry in some respects in terms of what we think we should fear and what we shouldn't fear. When we realize we look back on our lives, that actually we should never have scared that. Mm-hmm. And the positive note is if you can reduce your fear, then it can open up your world to things that you would never experience. So I think just anticipating things, the bad side of things can sometimes be a bad thing. So trying to understand what is good and what is bad can actually be important to a meaningful life, I think.
Yeah.
Or a successful life.
I think also there's something to say about how, you know, sometimes what you fear is maybe what you really want to do. And then once you face your fears, you can now achieve that or, you know, make that your career. Like, you know, a lot of people are like, I want to live in Seattle, but I'm afraid to move to Seattle because of this. And it's like, well, maybe just do that and you'll love Seattle.
Yeah.
I think that's also one thing I love about horror in general is that, like, in a way, it really, like, trivializes. It basically, like lets you into the matrix of, like, see how this is, like, not really a thing to be scared of. Or, like, see that, like, once you participate in this silly thing,
right,
you get to actually be really entertained by this.
Right, yeah.
That's something I love about horror that actually I think helps me with fear of like, oh yeah,
that makes sense.
I'll never actually be attacked by a demon from the 1500s. So,
but if you are, you're like, oh, this doesn't look as real as it.
Yeah.
Well, but you were though, weren't you? Yeah.
I was. I mean, that's right. This was
still
a BC
thinking
ghost.
That this demon's in him.
Yeah. Every day he fights it out by hitting him with the pickle jars on his hand.
Betsy does find me crawling on the ceiling quite a bit.
Too often. Yeah.
How often is too often?
What, three times a day?
Yeah.
Anytime he's hungry.
She just gets the broomstick out and pries me off.
Down. Come on.
Okay, great. Well, I'm really happy you guys came. I had a wonderful time.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for
having us. I learned so much.
Yes.
Yeah. You're amazing.
You're the most interesting person I've ever talked to.
Yeah.
Wow.
I really think so.
Yeah, my wife might disagree with you.
It's because you're always scaring her to see how her brain works.
Yeah,
she's all Dean, not again. Just quiet. Yeah.
Is there something you guys want to plug? Tell people about.
I mean, yeah, check out Horny for Horror on iTunes and
everywhere you find podcasts. Horny, the number four horror, Stitcher, everywhere.
We talk about all things horror, improvise horror movies, talk about horror movies, and then a lot of weird types of stuff.
Weird stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
You'll love it.
Yeah.
And people in LA can see you guys every Friday.
Yes, every Friday at UCB Franklin. Adam and I have a show at 8 p.m. and then Mono has a show at 9:30.
That's right.
Our team is Bangarang and Mono is on Winslow.
That's correct.
Two of the best teams. You guys got to go see them if you're in LA or visiting LA.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the number one thing to do.
Yeah,
UCB Franklin Friday nights.
Please.
And you can have some ice cream right next door.
Oh my God. Premium.
Between the shows.
Perfect.
Premium, baby.
Premium comedy, premium dairy. And premium vegan ice cream as well.
Exactly.
Premium dairy brings us back to it.
Oh, there it is. Every 27 years.
Right, a circle.
Something you'd like to tell people about? Can they check out your terrible
Yeah, I have
studies?
A website with more research on it. It's called deanmobslab.com.
Okay.
Awesome.
Some of the research I was talking about is on there.
Dean Mobs Lab, Mobs with two Bs.
Bs, yeah. M-O-B-B-S.
Okay. Dot com.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm going to check that out. And just read everything and go, I don't get it. I don't get it.
But then give us your number so we could text you questions all night.
Just say it on the air.
Okay, great. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Woo!
Cool.
Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh, and of course the executive Pennywise producer is Brett Kushner. Follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show. That's at Bad Science Show for cool quizzes and updates on what's coming next. And of course, send us an email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. If you request a film, we will probably do that film. So let us know what you want us to do. And let me know if I missed anything of interest, because I'm always trying to learn. I'm like a sponge that can't retain anything for some reason. Anyways, see you next week. Bye.